This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 18th of October 2019. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 18th of October, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Norma York.
Hello.
And Paul Newman.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. Now, the main headlines this week: district schools set for £2.45 million boost, council project will wrench away gardens, and ex-leader slams bin scheme disarray. So, Nikki, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Schools across Winchester are in line for a cash boost in the region of £2.45 million in the next academic year. But campaigners claim the majority will remain worse off than they were several years ago. The government has announced how much funding has been allocated to schools using the National Funding Formula, NFF, for 2021. Hampshire County Council has received an indication of how much it is set to be given, with a breakdown of the current financial guidelines for each school. Due to the soft use of the NFF in the country, the local authority could make adjustments to these figures so it can cover all educational needs. However, Winchester and Chandler's Ford MP Steve Brine said the announcement was a big win for the area. He said, although there is always more to do, the cash uplift will be very welcome in the constituency. I'm very pleased with this announcement, which marks a real staging post in the campaign many of us have fought, said Mr. Brine. School budgets have been largely protected from austerity and per pupil funding has risen, but changes to the lump sum and significant cost pressures have already tested head teachers and governors. On top of that, we have a serious issue with high needs funding in the county, with many local schools seeing a marked increase in the needs of children, especially with regards to social, emotional and mental health. The allocations present a mixed forecast for Winchester schools, with some predicted a sharp increase, while others could receive less than they did this year. This is in part due to the method used to calculate the NFF, which includes a large section being based on the number of pupils at the school on the most recent count, with an update due over the coming months. The Westgate School is listed in the Department of Education data as being in line for a 7.85% increase next year, and Perrin School could receive an additional 6.19%. Meanwhile, King's School is listed as receiving just 0.98% more than it did this year. At primary school level, Stanmore Primary could be hit with an 8.72% reduction. Western Church of England Primary and St Bede Church of England Primary could also face a drop of more than 3%. Local funding for primary school pupils will be set at £4,044 per pupil, increasing to £5,080 per secondary pupil for 2021. Finance managers at Winchester schools welcome the additional funding, but admitted it would not allow for widespread investments. Ian Pickles, business manager at King's School, said, "If they had not put additional funding in, we would be in crisis. I'm going to be as careful with my budget next year as I was this year. It is great that they are giving us funding, but we desperately need the additional funding. This allows us to hold our current position." Alison Kaplan, bursar of the Henry Beaufort School, said schools across the county face challenges funding for high needs. "We are not struggling as a school," she said. "We are in a fortunate position. We do not owe a lot of money and we have a quite good reserve. This is a very welcome move from central government, but in terms of how it will actually look, we are still in a bit of limbo." Jeff Barton, General Secretary of the Association of School and College Lecturers, said, "We are not being churlish. We're just stating the facts. The extra money for schools is not enough to reverse the cuts, and the funding crisis is not over." Councillor Ros Chadd, Hampshire County Council Executive Member for Education, said, "We welcome the additional funding for Hampshire schools. but are clear that, at this stage, the figures are indicative and subject to change in the light of updated pupil data. The money for high needs is also very welcome, but we anticipate this will only assist with the accrued deficits and will not meet current and future rising demands.
Council project will wrench away gardens. The widow of a celebrated architect who designed Hampshire Record Office is lamenting with Winchester City Council's station approach development. Lady Angela Stanfield Smith, whose husband Sir Colin Stanfield Smith created the Sussex Street building, says its gardens have been wrenched away by the 210,000 square foot plans. Sir Colin designed the building when the head of Hampshire County Council architects team and met the Queen when Her Majesty officially opened the facility in 1993. Lady Stanfield Smith said, "This was Colin's last building before he retired from the council, and I very proudly recall it being opened. I also recall the planting of the gardens, which created the setting for and are integral to the design of the Record Office. The station approach project looks to redevelop the area to play a key role in the future of Winchester, but Lady Stanfield, along with a number of other architects, claim the proposals will take away the beautiful gardens." Architectural historian Judith Martin describes station approach as overwhelming. She added, "The examples of good quality buildings promoted by local authorities are too rare. The station approach proposals are overwhelming, and the way that they impact on the Record Office and on the surrounding conservation areas is unacceptable. The council really must think again, particularly in light of its environmental aspirations." As previously reported, the City Council granted outline planning permission for its own application on September the 12th. Kate McIntosh, an architect whose development in Streatham, London, is now Grade 2 listed, said, "The space around the buildings is every bit as important as the buildings themselves, which is why I was delighted to join Angela's team of enthusiasts who set about tidying the pathway and garden to the station side of the property. The Himalayan birch woodland was carefully designed for the limited height of the trees and the lightness of their colour. The standing stone adds to the delight of the place and is needlessly lost would be tragic." The latest opposition to the 150 million station approach development, which will feature 190,000 square feet of office space and a further 20,000 square feet of retail, cafe and restaurant space, come as the City Council progress to the next phase of the plans. The Cabinet members are being asked to consider more detailed information on the selection process for its site purchaser, who would then take the project on and deliver the major development. And there are two pictures, one of a group of people led by Lady Angela Stanfield Smith in the Record Office garden, and the second picture is a CGI of the plans for station approach. And it reminds me a bit of the Tower of London that is completely dwarfed by everything else around it. And this seems to be exactly the same thing, with the poor little Record Office looking very tiny and this huge development behind it.
Ex-leader slams bin scheme disarray. A former city council leader has written to the current chief, asking her to urgently review the district's bin collection scheme. Conservative leader Caroline Horrell described the waste management as badly wrong in a letter to Lib Dem councillor Lucille Thompson. This comes after residents were left in the dark about updated collection times and the new curbside glass recycling system. Councillor Horrell told the city council leader she has grave concerns about the management of the current waste contract by your administration. In the letter, she continued, "You have had many months to prepare for the changeover of schedules and the introduction of the new glass collection, which we know needs painstaking project management. It is unbelievable to see so many issues for our residents in the witty Winchester City Council area. I am therefore asking for an urgent formal review by your administration to be completed as soon as possible of what's gone so badly wrong, so that all councillors are updated on the petition. She also questioned how many glass collection boxes still need to be delivered, how many information letters telling residents about the new scheme have not been delivered, how many missed waste collections are still outstanding, and what the status of residents with special waste collection requirement is. Councillor Horrell added, residents expect a council to empty their bins. It is one of the most important jobs an authority should do. But this Lib Dem administration cannot do it consistently across the district, and it has failed to implement the new glass collections successfully. If the Lib Dems can't empty the bins, what else can't they do? But Councillor Thompson says the problems have been inherited from the previous Conservative administration. She said, we were forced to extend the current bin contract for another year. The new rounds are part of solving some of those problems. We acknowledge that there have been delays in the distribution of letters and calendars, and we won't be using those printers again. As soon as we knew there was something wrong, not only the council, but Liberal Democrat councillors sprang into action using social media and personal contact to spread the word, leading to over 23,000 people looking at the bin calendars online. Local residents and parish councils also really rallied round and did a great job of informing their neighbours within 4 days of the new round starting. Over 97% of residents were putting their black bins out correctly. There is already a review taking place of what has happened.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. So now we continue with the death announcements, followed by Christian comment, and then letters, historical items, Chronicle comment, first person, and Belgarum. So we start with the death announcements this week. Blunt, Brian Victor Blunt, known as Brandy, who was a former mayor of Winchester who died on the 11th of October, aged 88. Hibbert, Anne Hibbert, died on the 30th of September, aged 80. Lever, Rosemary Lever, died peacefully in hospital on the 4th of October, aged 81. Morris, Mary Jane Morris, née Argyle, died peacefully at home. Peck, Desmond Peck of Alsford, died peacefully in the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 94. And Rayner, Marguerite Rayner, died peacefully on the 2nd of October, aged 88. And now we move on to Christian comment, read by Paul, please.
This Christian comment is by Mark Collinson, one of the canons of Winchester Cathedral. Last Sunday was Law Sunday at the cathedral. It's a service where people dress up and trumpets sound in fanfare of pomp and ceremony. It brings together judges and those who work in the law courts, the legal representatives of the Crown, the local government of county and city, the police, fire services and prison service, in recognition that all their authorities derive from the Crown and the Sovereign's authorities derive from God. The preacher was former government minister and ex-convict Jonathan Aitken. When he was serving time in HMP Belmarsh, he met Jesus and his life was transformed. He now serves as chaplain of Pentonville Prison in London. He pointed out that when Queen Elizabeth II was crowned in Westminster Abbey in 1953, when she was just 25 years old, she vowed to execute justice, to stop the growth of iniquity, and to punish and reform what is amiss. The Queen's authority to reign and bring justice is derived from the ancient custom of anointing the sovereign as God's representative to bring justice on earth. Much to the shock of those gathered, the preacher talked of the Channel 4 series Crime and Punishment, three episodes of which were filmed in Winchester Prison. It revealed the distressing conditions in the prison, which has crumbling infrastructure and suffered from widespread drug abuse, attempted suicides, self-harm, and brutal assaults on prison officers. Since that documentary was made, the new governor and deputy governor have been turning the place around. I felt privileged to be introduced after Sunday service to some of the prison officers now serving there. Their confidence is growing, not least as wider society recognises the significance of their sacrificial duty. Last week, the prison was announced as being out of special measures. We regularly pray for nurses and police and fire officers on the front line of duty. Should we not just as regularly pray for prison officers who face all sorts of trauma from dangerous people? How can we support the people who work with those the rest of society would rather forget? On Saturday, the Bishop of Winchester licensed Tim, who was trained with the School of Mission, to be a volunteer chaplain in Winchester Prison one day a week. He works with two ordained chaplains, so offering pastoral support to staff and inmates. The senior chaplain told me that he could do with 10 more Tims. Is this a way you could give back to society by visiting the people society would rather forget? This week, churches across the country are praying especially for prisons. In fact, at morning prayer every Wednesday, the church prays for those who work in the judicial system in prisons and for the victims and those who perpetrate crime. As the Queen announced the government's intention this week to increase prison sentences, let us also ensure that the resources are given to prisons, not just to punish, but to see transformation in the lives of those we condemn.
Thank you. Now we move on to letters to the editor. Nikki, the first, please.
The first from L.J. White. Why not depot? Sir, Sam Hatherley's report on the proposed car park at Mitchell Dever Station may be more destructive than it appears. Chronicle, October the 3rd. Is this a case of South Western Railways getting an extended car park ready for when the long-argued massive development of Mitchell Dever New Town takes place? The government could well overrule the local authorities on this matter. The car park question that should be asked of SWR is why are you taking our green space when there is ample underutilised railway land near the station? Perhaps a brief history lesson may be of interest. Mitchell Dever Station opened in 1840 as Andover Road and consisted of two platforms, with the station buildings being on the upside, as now. It was renamed Mitchell Dever in 1856 after Andover, later Junction, excuse me, was opened in 1854. The White Cliffs did not exist as such. These came about in the 1920s when the Southern Railways excavated the area to provide infill for land reclamation at the Southampton New Docks, i.e. Western Docks these days. Needless to say, all this went by train, with extensive sidings being provided, which in turn became storage sidings for rolling stock, awaiting their turn at Eastleigh Works for either overhaul or scrap. Many of the sidings were removed in the 1960s and 70s. In World War II, there was an urgent requirement for oil fuel storage tanks in the Southampton area, but away from the docks for obvious reasons. The big hole at Mitchell Dever was ideal, being sheltered on two sides by cliffs, and partly so on the other side. With the tanks encased in white concrete, this provided camouflage from air attack. The concrete was several feet thick, so in itself pretty bombproof. After the war, the depot continued to function as a local distribution depot until about 2000. Since then, it has been disused, with more sidings removed, but with a few retained for engineering, trains and emergencies. So returning to the original question, why can't this spare land become a car park? It is already railway land, but of course, being brownfield, it will cost more to develop. And that's from L.J. White, Sparrow Square, Eastleigh.
Tolerant Views. Bob Boddy writes, Sir, in her letter, Chronicle October the 3rd, Karen Barrett writes that the Lib Dems enabled a Tory government to instigate their austerity project. I, in turn, could say that the financial collapse which necessitated austerity took place under a Labour government. Indeed, I could add that Vince Cable, in After the Storm, wrote that when the Labour Party was in power, they must have been asleep at the wheel to allow the financial crisis to develop. But where would that get us, except to continue the blame game? I feel this is pivotal time for our country and think it's vital that we do everything we can to stop Brexit for the sake of our nation's future. But at a time when MPs are receiving death threats, we all need to be careful about what we say and how we say it in order to act out our shared values of tolerance and understanding. And that was from Bob Boddy, Egbert Road, Hyde.
This next letter, I think, is being read by the author. Yes, thank you, Paul.
Yes. Mm-hmm. This letter has been entitled Punishment, and it's by the Reverend Paul A. Newman, Cranworth Road, in full flood. I know him pretty well. Sir, I joined Her Majesty's Prison Service chaplaincy in the wake of the 1990 Her Majesty's Prison Manchester Strangeways riot. Subsequently, I got to know one of the leading protagonists held in segregation at HMP Wormwood Scrubs. Hearing his account of and role in the riot, which started in the chapel one Sunday morning and extended across the prison and rooftop for 25 days and nights, he testified to the precipitative, degrading conditions which became the subject of a formal inquiry and report under Lord Justice Wolfe in 1991. Radical recommendations included an end to daily slopping out in the absence of lavatories and cells, easier access to family links, and community-braced prisons. I therefore watched Crime and Punishment, Channel 4's recent documentary on Winchester Prison, with particular interest and concern. Arriving in Winchester as coordinating Anglican chaplain some 12 years later, I was encouraged to find evidence of the positive effects of Wolfe's report in the community prison designation of Her Majesty's Prison Winchester, a declaration of intention evidenced by multiple practical innovations. The recently departed governor and frontline staff deserve both recognition and commiserations amid the improvisational challenges of managing the degrading, dysfunctional and inhumane conditions portrayed in the series, which shone an unflinching light on the plight of the most disturbed people in our society, whose mental and psycho-emotional vulnerabilities and multiple social disadvantages are undoubted criminogenic factors. These prisoners have year on year suffered a deterioration of regime quality through staffing reductions and regime contractions amid 20% plus budgetary contractions across the prison estate for over 9 years. The present local recovery owes much to the resolve in his fleeting tenure of the inestimable Rory Stewart. But as in 1990, more to the damage consequent on internal resistance and revolt. We might ponder the relative value for money and values between the average annual cost per prisoner across the estate, £40,843, and its comparability with the annual fees of a place at Winchester College, £41,709. Addressing the House of Commons as Home Secretary in 1910, Winston Churchill said in a speech, "The mood and temper of the public in regard to the treatment of crime and criminals is one of the most unfailing tests of the civilization of any country." The annual Prisons Week in 2019 is October the 13th to the 19th, sponsored by a consortium of churches and other agencies.
Nikki.
And this from Rupert Pitt. Junction doubts. Sir, it is proposed to rebuild M3 Junction 9 at Winnall. The cost, according to the Highways England, will be £100 to £135 million. Apparently there is too much traffic there. Building roads and widening them merely produces more traffic, as the SACTRA, Department for Transport Standing Advisory Committee on Trunk Road Assessment report in 1994 showed. In 2017, the Campaign for Preservation of Rural England produced the report challenging the road building consensus, which also showed more roads increased traffic. The Newbury bypass was widened in 1996, and between then and 2015, traffic had increased by 56%. What will happen at Junction 9? In 10 years' time, there will be more traffic, so it has to be widened again at huge cost and destruction for the countryside. When does this end? Why is the policy of Highways England that every journey that anyone feels they wish to undertake must be subsidised by the taxpayer building more roads or widening schemes? It must be clear that many of our journeys are unnecessary. Supermarkets have far more choice of goods than is actually needed, resulting in huge lorry movement. Does Tesco really need 10 brands of rice, which necessitates more lorry journeys? The solution, as opposed to making the taxpayer pay for the road building programme, is to reduce the cost of public transport and introduce tolls on major roads so the user pays for their use. It happens for buses and train, where the user pays part of the cost of use, so why not for car drivers and the movement of goods? As in London, there should be a congestion charge in major cities, so we consider if we really need to make the journey by car. The money spent on this road improvement could be used for social housing, a much greater need than losing a few minutes in a car journey. And that from Rupert Pitt, St Cross Road, Winchester.
Andrew Rutter writes, cultural change to save the climate. Sir, the address by 16-year-old Greta Thunberg to the UN General Assembly, reproaching governments for inaction in response to climate change, has inspired schoolchildren worldwide to make their voices heard. But will they really be listened to? For lack of political will, we seem to be sleepwalking towards a crisis. There seems to be a sort of government vacuum concerning action that needs to be made. We have an enormous budget for the Trident, but no real budget for to combat climate change, except for funds already earmarked for the multiple needs for overseas development. So although one of the many questions some of the tactics of Extinction Rebellion, we shouldn't be surprised at the dispensing criticism of the new generations. So it was refreshing to receive a letter from a Woodland Trust that spells out what needs to be done in this sector to meet the net zero carbon emissions of the UK by 2050. Plant 50 million trees every year, or 32,000 hectares of woodland. This compares with just 10,000 hectares achieved in the best years over the last 25 years. This is in addition to combating the three international diseases attacking our oak trees and ash dieback, which threatens 80% of these trees. Winchester has a special problem with the elderly beech trees that provide the setting for the city. Whose responsibility is this? The Trust is responding to this daunting challenge by starting their own project for the Great Northern Forest from Liverpool to Hull, which will reduce flooding, create jobs and improve the health of 10 cities. But the scale of change shouldn't be left to charities. It should be part of the government strategy to set targets, provide seed funding and educate our population as to how this fits into the international work of the United Nations. If this had been the case, we would have much more credibility when criticising countries like Brazil for recommending cutting down the Amazon forest. Climate change has already had much more devastating effects overseas than we realise, and nothing short of cultural changes leading to unprecedented cooperation will do. And that was Andrew Rutter, St John's Road, Winchester.
This letter is entitled Decisions and comes from Chris Pollock in Hyde Street, Winchester. Sir, I don't wish to bother the council as they're clearly very busy, but I do sometimes wonder if they have their heads fully screwed on. Instead of refurbishing a perfectly good leisure centre placed near the centre of town and easily accessible to most residents, they're developing a much larger facility which is actually on the opposite side of the town from where most people live. Do you think someone should tell them that Winchester is actually quite a small town, not a metropolis requiring Olympic standard sports facilities? Next, they have spent several decades pondering what to do with the area at the bottom of town. The only progress they seem to have made is in giving it a rather embarrassing name. So busy have they been with this that it seems to have passed them by that a lot of people now acquire things using connected up computers, which makes shops less necessary. That is why quite a lot of them keep closing. As Saxon Gate got mired in various legal issues during which enough hot air was expended to completely negate the efforts of our Winnack friends, they decided instead to focus on the area by the railway station. At the moment, this area is completely unlivable, having a car park, trees, and a generally unnerving feeling of space. The council are remedying this by planning a large Any Town Anywhere development, which reminds me of the buildings on Euronotes, designed to be reminiscent of nowhere in particular. The good news is that apparently someone has suggested that North Wall should be two-way. When I moved to Winchester in 1995, I casually said to someone, wouldn't it make more sense if there was two-way traffic on North Walls so all the traffic didn't have to go through the centre? It used to be, I was told, but the council decided to change it. Oh dear. Chris Pollard, Hyde Street.
Thank you. That concludes the letter. So now we're going to step back in time. Nikki, you're going to start with 100 years ago.
Saturday, October the 18th, 1919. Six military prisoners who were in the charge of an armed escort who were en route from France to Winchester to undergo terms of imprisonment in the county jail effected an escape on Tuesday evening by overpowering and gagging their guard. Having apparently carefully planned the outrage, they carried it out in a most effective fashion, and it was not until the officer in charge of the party, on arrival at Winchester, went to look for the escort, not only were the latter missing, but that the escort had all been handcuffed behind and bound and gagged with putties, the whole thing being only comparable with some Wild West film picture.
And 50 years ago, Saturday, October the 18th, 1969, Hampshire Education Authority is to ask the County Council's Association for advice on providing free school meals during holidays to children with needy parents. This action, approved at Thursday's meeting, followed a suggestion from the Special Services Subcommittee that the wastage of food and difficulties in getting staff to cook for and supervise the children made it unreasonable to make holiday meals generally available. But the subcommittee also suggested that in individual cases of hardship, the Ministry of Social Security could be asked to make a special monetary allowance to the family concerned. The issue was originally raised last summer by Havant and Waterloo Education Committee, who recommended that the authority to consider the provision of free school meals to necessitous children through the holidays. They were particularly worried about families which receive financial help in term time but could not hope to in the holidays. And the second item is, hopefully with no more difficult words, concern that if Romsey and Stockbridge RDC object to the proposed increase in bus fares, it will lead to further diminution of the services offered, was expressed at the meeting of the Council's Finance and General Purposes Committee on Thursday of last week. During the discussion, Mrs. H. Perry, King Somborn, told members that King Somborn was now completely cut off on Sunday following the withdrawal of the service on that day by the King Alfred Bus Company. The committee decided not to object to the revision of the fares of the Hants and Dorset and Wilts and Dorset companies. However, they are to lodge a complaint with the traffic commissioners over the removal of the King Alfred Sunday service, and the company is also to be informed of the council's views.
25 years ago, Friday, October the 14th, 1994. Winchester has been given the prestigious honour of representing the whole of the northern part of the European Union and a project to help safeguard the heritage centres of the continent. The city will link up with three other European cities, Novi Ligure in Italy and Nafplion and Corfu in Greece, to produce a handbook of best practice and policies that can be used by other European cities to preserve their own distinctive ancient cultural history while boosting tourism. The project will be mainly funded by the European Union, although Winchester City Council may have to spend up to £6,800 and use senior officer time to play a full part in the process. Chairman of the External Relations and Local Economy Subcommittee, George Fothergill, commented, "Winchester was chosen to represent the United Kingdom in this exciting new joint venture. By participating, Winchester District is raising its profile on the European stage and attracting European funding to Winchester." The first stage of the project was reported to a meeting of the subcommittee on Wednesday. Mr. Fothergill, accompanied by Chief Leisure Officer Bill Ronan and Winchester Chamber of Commerce Secretary Barbara Bryant, represented the city at a two-day meeting in Corfu last week. Second item. Geoffrey Lamb thought it was just another meeting of the Winchester Magical Society, but the members had other ideas. They had a few tricks of their own to spring on their 90-year-old founder member. The astonished Mr. Lamb found himself the subject of a carefully planned "This Is Your Magical Life" show, complete with a traditional red book and surprise friends from his years as a magician, writer and school teacher. "The whole thing was a complete surprise," said Geoffrey, who's one of the country's foremost authorities on the history of stage magic. The red book, opened by fellow member and professional magician John Hart, contained signed photographs and compliments from leading stage magicians, including Paul Daniels, Tony Seabrook and Terry Herbert. But more surprises were to come as Geoffrey learned he'd been created a member of the exclusive Inner Magic Circle, the highest honour in the world.
Thank you. Now we're coming up to back to the present. And editorial comment, please, Nikki.
Headed, "Extra school funding arrived just in time." The financial challenges facing many aspects of society are clear to see. In this week's Chronicle, we have reported the challenges social care costs are having on the council, while in recent weeks there has been the prospect of a major boost for Winchester Hospital. One area still facing great difficulties, despite a cash injection from central government, is education. We report that Winchester schools could receive around £2.45 million next year. However, one school finance manager admitted this much-needed money has served to prevent a crisis. "It appears our schools are some way from being in the best position to provide children with the very best education possible." The government funding announced last week is the first year in a series of investment, which will reportedly rise to £52.2 billion nationally by 2022-23. While it is pleasing to hear of a positive dialogue with Hampshire County Council on the issue of how allocations could be adjusted, the message from schools needs to be heard on a national level. This finance is welcome, but it is not going to solve long-term problems.
And now first person, please, Norma.
"Man's Best Friend" by Khaled Aziz. A good friend's dog has just died. A sweet dog, acquired when full-grown and pretty amazing with a shooting field. This wiry English Springer bitch, while retaining all the bouncy enthusiasm of the breed, was just so biddable. She had a good nose. When it was down, you knew she was really working assiduously, much better than many larger dogs. She adored her owner, who clearly was also very fond of her. He was pretty cut up to see her go, struck down by some ghastly autoimmune disease at just 8. Even if they live their full term, good dogs never last long enough and bad dogs seem to go on forever. In reality, there is no such thing as bad dogs, only bad owners. I must be one of them. Our dog Arthur has had a checkered career. Of course, he's a flat-coated retriever, which, for those who claim to be in the know, says it all. They're notorious for being difficult dogs to train. Compared to Labradors, they never seem to get out of their teenage years. Fathoming them is something I have singularly failed to do. Arthur is our third flat coat, so you might justifiably say we never learn. True, Arthur's predecessors were more useful in the field, and his immediate predecessor Bertie had a nose for errant game on a par with Master of Wine. Many the time at the end of a shooting day would he disappear into the growing gloom as we were walking away from the last drive. I often thought I'd lost him for good, but he never failed, albeit up to 20 minutes later, to turn up with a wounded bird that had been overlooked by other dogs. Arthur, it seemed, is a different dog. I still cannot work out whether he's incredibly stupid or really clever. I suspect it's the latter, for he certainly runs rings round me. I often joke that the secret to training flatties is to consider any command to what the dog happens to be doing at the time. That way, you can still look vaguely in charge, even if your command has to be, "Yes, that's right, run away. No, even further." It's the only way of maintaining some vestige of dignity. I was privileged to know a much decorated Hampshire-based retired field marshal, sadly now no longer with us. He fancied himself as something of a picker-up. Sadly, his dog had other ideas, running in at the drop of the first bird of the day and then proceeding to eat it in full view of the guns and beaters. To compound matters, the dog appeared deaf to the field marshal's commands, including, "Come here!" bellowed in a tone to rattle the regimental sergeant major. My friend had once been chief of the general staff, so it was hard to comprehend that he had once had command of all of our armed service people. Thus can dogs make chumps of us all. They do, though, have their saving graces. They are loyal and stoic. Unlike wives, they are still excited by our return home with chums at midnight for a final drink to round off an evening. They ask little of us in return, a little food, somewhere reasonably warm to lay their heads. It's hard to fathom what they're thinking in their tiny brains, or indeed if they think at all. Unlike cats, of whom it is said they are simply working out ways to kill you, dogs seem genuinely want to please, unless, of course, they're Arthur, who blows hot and cold in the pleasing the master stakes. My chum's dog was different. She was a pleaser. Her brown eyes said it all. So raise a glass to dear Ivy, gone too soon, but remembered with fondness.
Very nice. Now, Paul, you've got a couple of items from Belgarum, I think.
Yes, an alternative look at the news. Donors beat the flooding. The heightened efforts of determined city centre recyclists are no longer a requirement after action was taken to relocate a moated clothes collection bin. In recent weeks, the drop-off facility in the corner of the Middlebrook Street car park had been surrounded by deep puddles from heavy downpours. This failed to prevent the purposeful members of the community who still found a way to leave their unwanted items for others to benefit from. However, this did leave items piled on the roof of the bin, and there's a photograph of this bin surrounded by water with black bin bags piled on top. It's a scene I know well because I cycle through those puddles. As the bin states, the proceeds from donations will be used for the benefit of the community. Although the condition of recent contributions is likely to be far from their best given the weather. These endeavours were made far easier in the past week as the clothes and shoes recycling bin has been relocated, although it remains to be seen just where in the locality this now is. This is a second item describing about the city's flint walls. There's a photograph of the flint walls amidst red brick of the White Horse Inn, the former White Horse Inn, and the outside the City Museum in the square. One of the distinctive building materials of southern England is flint. It was virtually the only stone available in the southeast, and builders got skilled at using it over the centuries. There are fine examples in Winchester, notably the former White House Inn pub on the High Street, now Clark's, and the City Museum on the square. Some house builders still use flints when they want to strike a vernacular tone. The proportion of cement to flint is much greater than these two, where the flint makes up most of the wall.
Thank you. That concludes Belgarum, and now we've got the announcements. We start with What's On, and there's the usual lunchtime concert on Tuesday in Winchester Cathedral at 1 p.m. with Sebastian Thompson on the organ. A slightly different recital in Romsey Abbey on Tuesday the 29th of October, and that's at 1 p.m. It's by Licorice, which is a clarinet quartet, and they're playing music from Handel to Ellington and Gershwin to Debussy. That's free with a retiring collection. And at the Theatre Royal on Friday the 25th of October, stand-up comedian Shappi Korshandi is returning for a new show. She graduated from King Alfred College, which is now Winchester University, in the 1990s and is now one of British comedy's most recognisable faces. And if you're interested in attending her show, it's on Friday the 25th of October. And you can ring the box office on 01962 840 440. Now, lighting up time ends Friday the 18th of October at 7:33 a.m. and begins at 6:07 p.m. Next Wednesday the 23rd of October, it ends at 7:41 a.m. and begins at 5:57 p.m. And if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with your recording you've received from us, please telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. And you'll find Mary's telephone number now attached to all the new memory sticks on the key fob attachment. Now we continue with items of general news. Nikki.
So much choice. Mum's call for vital donors. Without a stem cell transplant, I have 2 months left. The opportunity to reflect on being told that you have just 2 months to live 3 years down the road is not something many people can say. A diagnosis of acute myeloid leukemia, a cancer of the white blood cells, can so often lead to the worst possible outcome. For Joanna Calder, who lives in Lower Weald, north of Alsford, the situation was particularly bleak in 2015. The mother of two had already battled a condition once following an initial diagnosis the previous year. She had been told she had just a 35% chance of survival the first time around and went through isolation and bouts of chemotherapy. However, on its return, the cancer was much more intense. Joanna went into hospital to prepare for stem cell treatment, but she admitted that she had no hope they would find a donor. None of my three siblings were matches, which is often a better chance of finding a match, she told the Chronicle. I thought I had four possible matches, but none of them ended up being of any help to me. I spent the next 6 months preparing for stem cell treatment and was in hospital for weeks, and at this stage, I really was not well. Without a stem cell transplant, I had 2 months to live. The outlook for Joanna, now age 50, was not looking promising. With time not on her side, she started to set her mind on matters most people her age would never consider. It was important for me to be able to prepare for my death, said Joanna. I began a what-if file, my end-of-life file. I wanted the children to have some kind of control and ownership of the situation. I sat down and made a video of myself speaking to them so I could leave them something to always have. My daughter wanted to have birthday cards written until the age of 18, and my son wanted me to sing his children's lullabies. The options had all but run out until Thursday, March 3rd, 2016, a date she will never forget. Anthony Nolan had found a 9 out of 10 match with a 44-year-old British man who to this day remains anonymous to Joanna. It has just been 3 years since I had the transplant, she added. I know I'm in a privileged position. Most people do not get that chance. I think he's the most incredible person. I owe him everything. Since her transplant, Joanna recently celebrated her 50th birthday, something she had given up hope of at one stage, and she's been able to enjoy family holidays with husband James, son Toby and Alice, 18. Now she's encouraging others to potentially save someone's life by joining the stem cell donor registration with Anthony Nolan. All it takes to register is looking at a website and filling in a form to see if you meet the criteria, said Joanna. the chance of saving someone's life is such a gift to have. It is a gift that would almost certainly change your life and not just theirs. More than 2,000 people a year in the UK need stem cell transplant, and Anthony Nolan is the leading charity that finds matching donors for people with blood cancer and gives them a second chance of life. Joanna, who previously worked as a practice nurse, has relaunched her career with the aim of trying to support families going through a similar experience to her. There is a strong message having gone through all of this, she said. There is very little help for anyone battling through this from an emotional side, and even less help for teenage children. I'm making a return to nursing. I would like to take some sort of role helping people go through what I did. And there's a couple of really lovely pictures of the whole family on the beach, really muffled up against the winds, must have been fairly recent. And another one of them all sitting with life jackets on, obviously doing whitewater rafting together on one of their family holidays.
Yeah, nice story.
Damage of bin lorry smash leaves house boarded up. An investigation is ongoing into the events which led to a Biffa bin lorry smashing into the front of Stanmore property last week. As previously reported, the waste collection vehicle ploughed into two cars before coming to a halt when wedged in the semi-detached house in Drayton Street just before 8:30 a.m. on Tuesday, October the 8th. Following an extensive operation, the vehicle was removed, and since then the damaged property has been boarded up and fenced off. During the incident, the dust cart is believed to have narrowly avoided children who were walking to school and had to take evasive action before the lorry careered across several driveways and into the house. The City Council are investigating the incident, and a spokesman said support continues to be provided to the residents affected by the incident, and those living in the property have been temporarily rehomed. A Biffa spokeswoman said their investigations are continuing and they would not be providing any further comment. And there is a picture of the said house with quite a lot of bricks on one corner missing, and there are the metal barriers all around it. Must have been very frightening.
Top marks for citizens' advice. Citizens Advice Winchester District has gained an outstanding result in a recent audit. The charity was assessed on 9 areas of leadership, including financial management, governance, people management, and research and campaigns, and scored 5 out of 5 in every area. Chief Officer Natalie Webb said, "I am absolutely delighted by our recent audit result. As a local independent charity, it is essential we operate to the highest standards, and this audit confirms this. I'm incredibly proud of our team, and I'm especially grateful to our 70 volunteers who provide such a caring and professional service to the clients that we support every day. The result of this audit is a wonderful reflection on our organisation, and I'm proud to be part of it." Citizens Advice Winchester District provides free advice to more than 5,000 individuals every year with over 12,000 different issues. If you need advice, you can visit them in Winchester, Bishops Waltham, Alsford, Denmead or Wickham. Alternatively, call their advice line on 03444 111 306.
City protesters go to London. Climate change activists from Winchester cycled to London to join the biggest ever act of non-violent civil disobedience, quote unquote. The Extinction Rebellion, XR, protesters set off on a 65-mile bike ride last Monday, October the 7th, together with thousands of others demanding action. They have been blockading sites across central London, including Whitehall, Trafalgar Square and St James's Park. Activities have also taken place at London City Airport, with the slogan, "Fly today, no tomorrow." Matthew, a 16-year-old student from Peter Simmons College, said he took pride in being part of the growing campaign. He added, "I was a little bit scared of being arrested, but mainly excited. I wanted to make as much use of my life as I can, and that means doing the most good I can. In the face of ecocide, it's do or die." More than 1,300 protesters have been arrested in the capital since the protests began last week. Chris Todhunter, founder and co-director of Winchester-based company Studio Republic, who joined the protesters in London, said, "All of our team have 2 days each year that they can use for volunteering. I can't think of a better cause that we could get behind." When asked if he thought the protests were an inconvenience on Londoners' days, he replied, "Yes, it's a pain, but there are people dying right now as a direct result of our actions in the West. We Westerners are the biggest contributors to the climate breakdown, so it's up to us to clean up our act and take responsibility. We won't change the world for better by sitting at home." And there's quite a few pictures. One is quite hard to describe, but it's a sort of deathly, spectral woman, completely in black, with this veil. Well, it could be hair, frankly, it's short, holding a clock, ticking. XRSA, yeah, the clock is ticking. And there's a large banner, Now or Never, and many young up behind it. And another one which says, "Extreme flooding ahead," with a picture of one of those red triangles with the water lapping up against a house. And then, "Stop Ecocide, Change the Law." And then there's a group of about five young girls, with all with their face painted white, like the Black Lady of Death or Time, completely dressed in red, which I didn't quite get the point of, but anyway, wearing their iconic, quote, red robes. And another large picture of them at the memorial in London.
Wheelchair weights above target period. Hampshire has one of the worst records in England for wheelchair waiting times, new figures show. Excuse me. Clinical commissioning groups in England are required to deliver wheelchairs to patients within 18 weeks of a referral, with the NHS guidance stressing the paramount importance of the timescale from referral to delivery. But 200 people were forced to wait longer than the 18-week window in the NHS West Hampshire CCG area, which includes Winchester, between April and June this year. In total, 291 had wheelchair or other equipment prescribed and delivered to them in that time, meaning that the CCG area had a success rate of just 31%, making it one of the worst performances for the CCG in England. Charities have warned that substantial gaps in provision across England are leaving many disabled people without the wheelchairs they need, affecting their independence and leaving them in pain or discomfort. Rob Burley from Charity Muscular Dystrophy UK said, "Substantial gaps in services across the country while leaving disabled people without the basic equipment they need." He said, "Wheelchairs are not a luxury, and having access to suitable equipment is vital."
Smiles on stage for graduation success. More than 2,300 Winchester University students have been graduating at the Cathedral this week. The annual celebrations began on Monday, the 14th of October, with a procession from Abbey House, seeing civic dignitaries from across Hampshire joining senior staff from the university. Alongside the students, a list of prominent public figures have been awarded honorary doctorates and fellowships. Professor Joy Carter, Vice-Chancellor of the university, said, "Graduation is one of life's most significant occasions and is consistently one of my favourite times in the academic year. As the University for Sustainability and Social Justice, making a difference is key to what we do here at Winchester. We hope our students leave Winchester with the knowledge, wisdom and strength to make a real difference in the world." It may be noted, it's not reported here, that 2,300 trees have been planted or planned, paid for by the university to represent one for each graduand this year, and that every attending graduand had a copy of Greta Thunberg's little book, paperback, given to them free of charge. Among the celebrities receiving honorary degrees, during the nine individual ceremonies, each attended by the Chancellor of the University, Alan Titchmarsh, honorary doctorates and fellowships have also been handed to prominent public figures. Dame Judy Bench was in line Dench was in line to receive an honorary Doctorate of Arts for services to dramatic arts. The same doctorate was given to actor Hugh Bonneville, best known for his role as Robert Crawley in Downton Abbey. Other prominent individuals being honoured included author Bernard Cornwell, cricketer James Adams, educator Stephen Frank, charity chief executive Luke Gamble, and TV actor Steve Furst.
Rare baby bongo born at Marwell Zoo. A rare baby bongo has been born at Hampshire Zoo. The critically endangered mountain bongo was born at Marwell Zoo on September the 29th to first-time parents Kailina and Ituri. Keepers have named the female calf Ada, which means first-born daughter, and report that she's very strong and lively, and Kailina is being a brilliant and attentive mum. The striped baby has bright chestnut coat with a long tufted mane from her shoulders to her rump and huge oversized ears. Marwell Zoo's conservation biologist, Dr. Tanya Gilbert, says, "The last time we celebrated the birth of a mountain bongo here was over 10 years ago, so this is really special, not just for us at the zoo, but for the conservation of the species as a whole. The mountain bongo is on the brink of extinction, with fewer than 70 in the wild. That's far less than the Sumatran orangutan, so this species really is incredibly rare. Mountain bongos are currently only found in four separate populations in Kenya, where they live in montane forests in the highlands. Threats including hunting, loss of habitat due to illegal logging, and diseases transmitted from domestic cattle. Marwell Life, which owns and operates Marwell Zoo, is working with Masters of Research students looking at both genetic and husbandry factors that influences birth success." Dr. Gilbert added, "If we have a better understanding of reproductive success, then we have a better chance of improving birth rates and long-term population persistence." Other successful births from Marwell Zoo this year, including an endangered okapi, an endangered Brzezinski's horse, two scimitar-horned oryx, which are extinct in the wild, two lesser kudu, three greater flamingos, a plains zebra, and most recently, an endangered Grevy's zebra. The zoo in Coldon Common has a dedicated team of experts who work to support endangered species and carry out vital conservation work in the UK and abroad. And there is a picture of the baby bongo, which is as described, but utterly enchanting, with a little black muzzle and dark liquid brown eyes and its huge ears.
And another animal story. Seasonal warnings over deer on county roads. They look cute and are harmless, although many conservationists say there are too many and they damage native flora. But deer can be deadly when they stray onto roads. With the clocks changing and nights drawing in, motorists are being urged to watch out for the animals. The upcoming clock change will mean deer movements will coincide with peak commuting hours, increasing the likelihood of collisions. The CLA is urging drivers to be more aware and to take note of the following advice. When you see a deer warning signs or are travelling through a heavily wooded or forest stretch, check your speed and stay alert. If your headlights are on, use full beams when you can, but dip them if you see a deer as they may freeze. More deer may follow the first one you see, so be alert if you see the first one. Be prepared to stop. Try not to suddenly swerve to avoid the deer. Hitting oncoming traffic or other obstacles could be even worse. If you have to stop, use your hazard warning lights. There are around 2 million wild deer in the UK. October to December is considered a high-risk period as deer will be on the move for the autumn mating season, also known as the rut. The highest risk of a collision is between sunset and midnight and shortly before and after sunrise. Across the UK, it is estimated that there are about 70,000 deer-related vehicle accidents a year, resulting in 400 to 700 human injuries and 20 deaths. And because we're near the New Forest, Don't forget the ponies and the cattle that are also wandering in the roads.
Those fungi, the unsung heroes of an English autumn. Fungi are the unsung heroes of autumn. They come out in force to fuel our forests, prettify our paths, and breathe life into our beloved wild places. As the trees shed their leaves and the land braces for winter, the humble mushroom thrives. Fungi are part of a vast and varied group of decomposers and play a vital role in our ecosystem. By transforming dead animals and vegetation into raw nutrients that can be absorbed by plants, fungi sustain and nurture the plant life around them. There really is no end to the generosity of fungi. When they're not pumping nutrients into the soil, they're providing a valuable food source for a host of birds and mammals, including badgers, deer, mice and squirrels. From great gelatinous blobs on the ground to the neat toadstools on which a fairy might perch, fungi come in spectacular ranges of shapes, sizes, colours, and sometimes very pungent smells. There are some bizarre varieties of fungi, some attractive and dainty, and some so revolting that even the most committed fungi enthusiasts retch at the sight of them. The infamous stinkhorn, for example, emits a foul odour like rotting flesh, so strong that it can be detected from as far away as 20 metres. At the start of its life, the stinkhorn resembles an egg, later developing a slimy red stalk which may grow up to 20 centimetres high. Its dark green cap is covered with a stinking mucus designed to attract flies. The flies feed from the stinkhorn and dispense its spores wherever they next land, an unusual method of reproduction, but effective nonetheless. At the other end of the spectrum, we have the fly agaric, a cheerful red mushroom decorated with fetching white spots, often portrayed in children's fairy stories with a pixie sitting on the top, and bright red caps can measure 15 centimetres across. It is a little known fact that the signature white spots that characterise this fungus are actually the remains of a veil which covers the immature mushroom.
Corbyn warns of Brexit risk to jobs. Jeremy Corbyn has warned of a huge threat to jobs all across Southampton if Britain leaves the European Union without a deal at the end of this month. During a visit to Hampshire, the Labour leader said Boris Johnson seems to be heading for a no-deal exit, but that Labour would pass new legislation if necessary to stop him. Mr Corbyn was at the site of the decommissioned Forley Power Station, where MHI Vestas employs around 50 people painting giant sails for wind turbines. Mr Corbyn told the Chronicle, "From Southampton's point of view, trade with Europe is absolutely essential. Tourists that come from Europe, ships that go to Europe, goods that are exported, goods that are imported. If that trade is disrupted by going on to World Trade Organization arrangements, then clearly it's a huge threat to jobs across Southampton." Parliament will sit this Saturday after a key EU summit to discuss the next steps on Brexit. The Prime Minister has insisted that he will take Britain out of the EU with no deal if necessary, despite an Act of Parliament intended to force him to request an extension if no agreement is reached. Downing Street sources suggested earlier this week that a Brexit deal was looking unlikely. Mr Corbyn said, "I think Boris Johnson's ill-judged remarks mean that he seems to be heading for a no-deal exit." He said Labour would pass new legislation if necessary to get an extension to Britain's EU membership in order to work out a future relationship. Labour says it would seek a new withdrawal deal and put that to the public in a referendum. The Labour proposal is we have a trade relationship with Europe based on a customs union, trade access and protection of rights, which is something the EU is quite prepared to negotiate with us, he said. We've allowed ourselves 3 months to do that, and then a referendum between that and Remain and Reform. The MHI Vestas site employs around 50 people painting 80-metre, 262-feet, sails for offshore wind turbines so they can withstand the elements. They are brought to Forley by barge from the company's factory on the Isle of Wight, where it employs more than 700 people. Mr Corbyn said that the process was very impressive indeed.
the family history hidden in papers, Barry Sherlock delves into the archives of the eminent Hampshire family. The Wallop family, Earls of Portsmouth, have been associated with Hampshire since at least the Domesday. There are no less than four places which contain the name of the family. A record? Though the Wallops may, in fact, have derived their name from the villages. The family seat at Fairley Wallop, however, definitely took the name from the family. Now a luxury let for the super-rich, it was for centuries occupied by the family. Then, in 1667, it burnt down, allegedly on the orders of the king as punishment for Robert Wallop's siding with Parliament during the Civil War. Rebuilt in 1731, it was let for the next 200 years, and the family moved to a vast mansion built on their estate at Hurstbourne Priors. It wasn't until the 1920s that the Fairley Wallop was taken back by the 9th Earl. The personal papers of the Wallops survive, nearly 7,000 items in 200 boxes, to be precise. They provide a rich source for telling the story of the family. Also, they incidentally include information on the people who worked with them and for them. According to the analysis by the Hampshire Archives Trust, thousands of family historians with more humble ancestors are missing valuable sources of information about their ancestors, like those of the Wallops, because they rely too much on online archives. This has highlighted the fact that some family studies could be dramatically extended by making greater use of the physical records not yet available online. This is the experience of expert Paul Pinhern, chairman of the Hampshire Genealogical Society, who said, "Many online sites are just collections of transcription data sets and family historians cannot see the actual record. My own experience of searching for ancestors in Fairley Wallop allowed me to view and handle a bundle of parchment relating to the Wallops. I believe this is one of the best ways of finding out more about our ancestors than just dates of baptism, marriages and burials." The Wallop papers cover no less than 20 places in the county, equaled by another long-established and influential Hampshire family, the Paulettes, Marquesses of Winchester and Dukes of Bolton. Some other collections are limited to smaller areas, like those of the Portal family of Laverstoke, papermakers, and the Russell family, Dukes of Bedford, seated at East Stratton, and with holdings mainly around Micheldever. After 1804, the estate was sold to the banker Sir Francis Baring, whose records also survive, together with those of his son Lord Ashburton, whose holdings were mainly in Itchenstoke and the Candover Valley. There are many other collections waiting to be mined by family historians, including Titchborne of Titchborne, Chamberlain of Cranberry, and many others. And there's a picture of Fairley Wallop, the ancestral home of the Earls of Portsmouth, and it's very grand.
First-time landlords having lots of fun. Two first-time landlords are having lots of fun running their Winchester pub and hope to become a key part of the local community. Debbie and Scott Limbury took the reins at the Golden Lion in Oldswick Road earlier this summer, moving to the city from New Milton. Ever since, they've been finding their feet and learning the tricks of the trade. The pair of self-proclaimed foodies have been looking for a pub to run for a little while and say the Wadworth-owned watering hole came up at the right time. Debbie said, "It's almost as if it was fate. We didn't even know the pub existed until we met here with our friends to have lunch." Scott and I said to each other, "God, this is nice." And the next day we were contacted to say it was available. Now, step by step, they're looking to make the dog-friendly site their own, offering something for everyone. The picturesque pub, which is one of the only in Winchester to have a car park, is available for functions like weddings and birthday parties, has a children's area, and features a popular garden. Different events are put on almost every day, including Sunday lunch, curry nights, live music, join-in jamming sessions. That's musical, not making jam. The landlords are also looking forward to announce more events in the near future. Scott said, it's all about offering something to everyone. We want to offer proper pub food, but we'll always have a separate menu with a number of choices for vegetarians and vegans. No matter the customer's dietary requirements, we will always have something for them. Although Scott and Debbie are looking to refurbish parts of the pub, this will not affect function availability and will remain open throughout. This has been a big learning experience, said Debbie. We've met some lovely people here and it's been nothing but a nice experience so far.
Officers launch investigation into city sex attack. A woman was the victim of a serious sexual assault in Winchester in the early hours of Saturday. Police are investigating the incident, which took place at around 5 a.m. on October the 12th in the vicinity of St George Street. The victim was a woman aged in her 20s. Hampshire Constabulary are appealing for any dash cam or mobile phone footage taken in the city centre between the hours of midnight and 6 a.m. to assist in their inquiries. Detective Inspector Graham Eaton said, "We are appealing to people who were either driving or on foot in the city centre who may have seen or heard something suspicious or captured images or footage that might help our investigation. We are interested in any footage taken in the city centre, but are also very keen to see any captured in the vicinity of St George Street, St Peter Street and Jury Street. If you are out and about within these timescales and think you can help, please contact us by calling 101, quoting Operation Diagram." Detective Inspector Eaton added, "I would like to reassure residents that this type of incident is very rare. We are doing all we can to establish what has happened and prevent any further offending. High visibility patrols continue to be carried out in the area."
Body found in search for inspirational top doctor. A body was found by police in the hunt for a missing doctor from Winchester. During searches for Dr. Peter Betts, a retired consultant paediatrician at Southampton General Hospital, police discovered a body on Monday night. Dr. Betts had been reported missing from his Winchester home earlier in the day. A Hampshire police statement said formal identification had not yet taken place, but Dr. Betts' family had been informed. Tributes have been paid to the 76-year-old, who initially split his time between Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester and Southampton General Hospital, before moving to the latter permanently in 1989. Dr. Derek Sanderman, Medical Director at University Hospital Southampton, NHS Foundation Trust, said, "Peter Betts was an inspirational paediatrician who worked here for more than 20 years, led the development of paediatric and child protection services, and was a key figure in the development of the unit. He also established a centre of excellence in paediatric endocrinology and diabetes and was recognised nationally and internationally for his skills and expertise. He will be well known to many staff members and impacted massively on many children and their families. He was a gifted teacher and mentor and was loved by everyone. He will be very sadly missed, and our thoughts are with his family at this sad time." Dr. Betts of Compton retired in 2005 at the age of 62 after 27 years at Southampton Hospital. His role saw him look after hundreds of children with diabetes, glandular and growth problems. Dr. Betts' work included being part of a national committees, particularly those regarding diabetes. Speaking to the Chronicle when he retired, Dr. Betts, a father and a grandfather, said, "The paediatrics department has always been a happy department and a great place to work." The police statement said, "We are not treating the death as suspicious, and a file is being prepared for the coroner."
Hospital's new prayer area. Patients, visitors and staff at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital now have an additional space in which to pray. A new multi-faith room, which contains washing facilities for Muslims, is now available as part of the chaplaincy facilities at the hospital. The room was officially opened by Mayor Councillor Eleanor Bell. Dr. Zishan Arfeen is one of the members of staff who will be using the multi-faith room on a regular basis. "I'm very pleased that we have this space in which to pray," he said. "It's a wonderful initiative and shows that the trust is really inclusive. I'm a Muslim, and while we have been able to use one of the spare rooms or the chapel to pray, There wasn't really enough space, and we sometimes felt we were disrupting other people. The chaplains have been fantastic and have worked really hard to get this extra space. We cannot thank them enough. Christine Whitehead, one of the chaplains at the Hampshire Hospital's NHS Founding at Dacian Trust, added, "People of any faith are able to use the room, and it will be available for Muslims to use 5 times a day for their prayers."
150 more officers for the county. Hampshire is to benefit from more than 150 new police officers. The Home Office confirmed last week the officer recruitment target for police forces in England and Wales for the first year of the drive to increase their ranks by 20,000 over the next 3 years. Hampshire Police will be able to recruit 156 new officers, which will increase their officer number by 6%. However, the figures have been met with criticism from the Hampshire Police Federation, HPF, who said that although they are delighted with the recruitment of new officers, they do believe the numbers are not enough. The government is providing £750 million to support forces to recruit up to 6,000 additional officers onto our streets by the end of 2021, as part of this first stage in this new uplift. Police forces in the South East will be able to recruit a total of 693 new officers. This includes Thames Valley Police, which will be able to recruit 183 new officers, increasing their officer number by 4%. Home Secretary Priti Patel said, "The public are clear they want to see more police officers on their streets, whether they live in the city or the countryside. This is the people's priority, and it is exactly what the government is delivering. This means that communities across the South East will have up to 693 more officers keeping a watchful eye on them and helping to cut crime." Zoe Wakefield from HPF said, "Obviously we are delighted after the 10 years of cuts. However, the funding is a lot less in Hampshire than in other sectors, but it will take years to repair the damage made by the cuts. The 156 officers is excellent, but it's just not enough. All officers recruited as part of the 20,000 uplift will be additional to those hired to fill existing vacancies. They are also on top of the extra officers already being recruited because of the £1 billion increase in police funding for 2019-2020, which includes money from council tax and for serious violence. The National Policing Board, set up by the Prime Minister in July to drive progress recruitment and other major policing issues, last week heard that all forces are accelerating their recruitment already, and the website for the campaign, Be a Force for All, has been visited more than 215,000 times. The announcement follows the establishment of a £25 million Safer Streets Fund.
Campaign urges youngsters to help charity provide care. Excuse me. A vital life-saving service is calling on schools, clubs and youth groups to help keep their paramedics life-saving ready by taking part in their new education campaign. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance, HIOWAA, today launched their Learning Saves Lives initiative. It costs the charity £6 a day to fund the training of one critical care paramedic over the course of a year. With the help of 4 to 16-year-olds across the region, HIOWAA aims to raise £30,000, enough to train 15 of their paramedics. The charity is encouraging schools and youth groups to raise funds by hosting non-uniform days and dress-up days. Rachel Lehman, HIOWAA Director of Fundraising, said, "Every day is a school day for our critical care paramedics, and they need your help to allow them to keep learning. If a class of 30 pupils each donated £1, imagine what a difference that would make. Learning Saves Lives aims to engage young people with the many steps involved in becoming a critical care paramedic." Joanna Hennessy, Education Programme Manager, said, "Our aim is to encourage young people to raise enough money to fund the ongoing training of our critical care paramedics, so they're always life-saving ready. At the same time, by educating young people about what it takes to become one of our paramedics, we could be looking at the next generation of lifesavers. the launch of Learning Saves Lives follows the success of Save Up to Suit Up, which recently funded over 30 new flight suits for the charity. Schools and clubs interested in getting involved in the Learning Save Lives should visit the charity's Get Involved webpage at www.hiowaa.org.
Pupils meet city MP to discuss green issues. Green-minded students from the ICO group at Westgate School met MP Steve Brine to learn more about the government's stance on climate change and what MPs can do within their constituency to help. Westgate has a dedicated team of pupils who volunteer their free time to ensure the school and wider community are as environmentally friendly as possible. Achievements in the last year include launching recycling schemes, including for plastic water bottles and crisp packets, establishing meat-free Mondays with the catering providers, regularly cleaning and improving the pond area to ensure it is a safe environment for their newts to live in, and redesigning the school blazer so that it is made from recycled bottles. Following this, each pupil had prepared some questions for Mr. Brine to learn how the government deals with climate change. Many issues were raised and discussed both on a national and local level, and it was agreed that although the government are taking steps towards making a more eco-friendly nation, they could be doing more to enable local authorities to combat the issue on a more personal level. It was also agreed that Winchester does not have enough facilities to enable large numbers of children and indeed the general population to cycle around the city and specifically to school. The effect of this has been seen around the city, with St George's Street in the city centre having very high levels of pollution, as well as many pupils being dropped off in cars to both primary and secondary schools, where cycling or walking would otherwise be a cleaner environmental option. All pupils came away from the meeting with a hope that in the near future, Winchester and its surroundings may take huge steps towards a cleaner future. And there's a photograph of Steve Brine with the Eco Group at the Westgate School in full flood.
Relaunch of Diverted Giving. A long-running initiative to help the homeless in Winchester has been rebranded. The Spare Change for Lasting Change rebrand was launched in Winchester to coincide with World Homeless Day last Thursday. Dating back to the 1990s, it was latterly called Spare Change for Real Change, with collection boxes in shops around the city centre. The proceeds are divided up to the two local charities that help the homeless in Winchester, the Trinity Centre on Derngate and the Night Shelter on Jewry Street. Winchester Business Improvement District facilitates the scheme, which is also supported by Winchester City Council. Collection boxes are located in businesses across the city centre. Each year, at a business breakfast organised by Hampshire Chamber of Commerce and sponsored by Winchester BID, a cheque is presented to the two charities by local MP Steve Brine.
Inspectors praise for care service. A Doctors' Federation, which supports GPs across central Hampshire, has been praised by inspectors. Mid-Hampshire Healthcare Limited, which provides services for around 220,000 patients, was rated as good in a recent Care Quality Commission report. The organisation assists many Winchester practices, including St Clement's Surgery, St Paul's Surgery and Alsford Surgery. The CQC inspector rated Mid-Hampshire Healthcare Limited as good for the safe, effective, caring and well-led categories and outstanding for the responsive area. The inspector's report said the provider worked in association with member GP practices, other local services and key external stakeholders to support the local geographical area with the provision of extended primary care services. Staff had the information they needed to deliver safe, effective and holistic support to patients. Patients received coordinated and person-centred care, which was innovative and forward-thinking. Staff treated patients with kindness, respect and compassion. Mid-Hampshire Healthcare has 18 member practices and aims to improve the provision of primary care and community services.
fire service more diverse than ever. The number of women joining Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service has increased by almost 900%. It comes after a campaign was released by the service to promote the role of a firefighter to underrepresented groups, which led to 13 women out of 41 new recruits beginning their careers in the emergency fire service. According to the Hampshire team, the standard of applicants was so high this year that a talent pool was created for a total of 70 successful candidates for either this intake or future roles. Their previous recruitment drive at the end of 2017 was made up of 27 men and one woman, and before this the organisation had not recruited for 8 years. Seven of the new firefighters are from Black, Asian or minority ethnic backgrounds, compared to zero in the previous intake of recruits. Inclusion and Diversity Manager Leanne Illman said, "We had a targeted recruitment campaign in which we tried to remove historic barriers that may have previously prevented people from considering the fire service as a career. This increase is great news, but there is still more to do to ensure people from all underrepresented groups in our communities know the fire service is a fantastic place."
Thank you. That concludes the extracts for this week. Excuse me. Thank you to our editors, Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. And thanks to our Copying Dispatch and Memory Stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Norma York.
Goodbye.
Paul Newman.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week. And when you finish with this week's recording, please pop the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.